Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions, 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. Going to be a great day for the garden. Going to be a great day. Go out there and no bright burning sun. I mean, it was hot yesterday. That's the only phrase for it. I'm not ready for the heat yet, okay? I'd like to have more than 3 days worth of spring. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's getting hot faster than I would like it to. I would love to see it stay. Today may not be a bad day in terms of temperature, and it'll be a lot better simply because won't have sun. It'll be overcast. So, great day to be out in the garden. Let's go to the phone. This is John. John, what can I help you with?
Hi, Jeff. First-time caller from Austin. Two questions about vegetable plants I have in a greenhouse. One is I have some tomatoes, and they seem to thrive. The plant grows tall, gets a lot of blooms, but I only have one or two tomatoes set on. Whereas some I have in an outdoor vegetable bed don't get as tall, but seem to have no problems giving me fruit. The other question is, a couple months ago, I planted both broccoli and cabbage. The broccoli I'm already harvesting. The cabbage has gotten real tall and big, but no head setting on. And I was wondering, is that an issue with cabbage or anything you can do with that in the future?
It may be because of the heat. The fact you're getting broccoli is great, but the cabbage may be responding, going, hey, you know, I'm really a cold weather crop, and we've warmed up a little bit here, and that can cause it to have a difficulty making a head. Nothing you can really do about it other than plant in earlier time or in cooler weather, so that you're harvesting. A harvest of cabbage this late, I think you're dealing with temperatures here more than anything.
Okay.
As for your tomatoes, what are you fertilizing the greenhouse tomatoes with?
I'm honestly not sure of the brand name, but it was a vegetable and tomato feed granular.
Got it. The only thing I was thinking is that it's setting all these fruit or blooms that aren't following through to fruit. One of the things that will help is if you can put a fan in the greenhouse. The breeze blowing on the tomatoes can help pollen come loose and fall in the right places in the flower blossom, which will cause you to get fruit. Tomatoes don't need bees. Don't let somebody tell you that first. They don't need bees, but they do need a little bit of a breeze. You can go by and shake them, grab the main stem and give it a little rattle there. I know a lot of people are thumpers. They take their finger and they thump each one of the blossoms.
To help
improve, hopefully improve the fruiting ability of the tomato. I have mine outside. And it's been windy as all get out. I haven't seen any bees on it. I haven't seen pollinators on it. But I think the wind is doing a great job of pollinating the plants. So that could be an issue. If you're using the same fertilizer on both sides of the equation there, in and out of the greenhouse, that may be it. The greenhouse may just need a breeze.
Haven't thought about that. That's a good tip. maybe too late for this year, but I'll try it for next year.
It shouldn't be too late. If they're forming blossoms,
okay,
then give them a shake. Maybe that's just not pollinating to produce enough fruit. You can be a thumper or, you know, put a fan in there or go in every day and just give the plants a little shake there to try to help encourage them. Because the rest of your practices, watering, fertilizing, etc., and the plant looks good, it could be something as simple as that.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
You bet. Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, folks, people will say, well, you don't have any pollinators for your tomatoes. You don't need pollinators for your tomatoes. Yes, it can help. I fully get that. But you don't need them. They're perfect flowers. The pollen falls on the pistil of the plant, on the pistil of the flower. You don't need a pollinator, but it helps a great deal if you get the pollen fall. That's where a breeze can come through. So you have to understand that. Sometimes the most ridiculous and simple thing is the problem. It seems silly, but try it. You have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. My tomatoes are blooming. Actually got my first little tomato out there. It's about the size of a small pea, but it's forming a tomato. And I'm happy. 4 out of my 6 tomatoes have blossoms on them. Great. I'm looking forward to tomatoes. I'm even more impressed that I have 2 bell peppers that are blooming and forming bell peppers. Really looking forward to it. I'm trying a new variety that's supposed to be a red bell. I'm hoping it does in fact do a true good thick-walled red bell pepper. Gonna have to find out. I got a text here, and I'm going to play semantics a little bit here, and I'm sorry. Is it too late to plant any kind of wildflower seed? You have to define any. Is it too late to plant bluebonnets? Yeah, probably. If you mean I'm going to plant them and I expect to bloom this year, not too late for bluebonnets. Is it too late for things like Gallardia? Is it too late for paintbrush? Or is it too late for some of these others? No. So you can be putting down wildflower seeds now. You just have to understand that some of the seeds may sit in the soil for a long time before they actually grow and bloom. Others may come up really quickly. So is it too late to plant any kind of wildflower seed? You have to be specific about the seed. Can you generally plant all of the wildflower types that we have? Can you plant those seeds now? Yup. You just may not see a bloom till next year. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I need to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Everybody, let's see here. I was happy yesterday when we got done planting the tree, walked over to another part of my yard, and my roughleaf dogwood is covered with flower buds. Not quite open yet, but it's not going to be long. And it's our go-to. When we were raising monarchs, we have let five monarchs go this week. We raised five with the hopes that our grandkids could see them. And of course, no, they didn't. They timed everything wrong and came out when no one was here. So we would normally take them out and place the monarchs on the flower of the dogwood simply so they can get a place to kind of get their, you know, get their coordinates right and get ready to go on. But it's blooming, or getting ready to bloom. It has plenty of buds. They look really pretty when they let loose, too. I have a lot of coneflower. And my coneflower, I should call it walking coneflower, because I planted it in one particular place and it grew really well for many years. But slowly but surely, it's been walking its way around the flower bed where it was growing really well. Well, it's not there anymore, but it moved over a foot or two. So I'm still getting the coneflower with those gorgeous blooms, the purple lease with the orange cone. Oh, man, they are pretty plants. I have a boatload of buds right now getting ready to open up. Really looking forward to it. Easy plant. I have had it in places where it gets no extra water. And I have it in places where it's pretty much regularly watered. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to go on about my business and produce these beautiful blooms. And they are. And you know, coneflowers have a second use. You get the beautiful blooms and then the flower petals fall off and you've got this black cone on the top of the stalk. Well, my goldfinches go nuts over that. I can see them lots of times hanging on to this flower stalk, just to plucking the seeds out. They love it. It really brings in those birds, and, you know, that's a benefit. I don't have to do much to the flowers. I also think that's why they're walking. They may be plucking out seeds, but they're not eating them all, which is not unusual. So it is amazing, the interface between the plants and the wildlife. But I'm having a lot of luck right now with coneflowers. My dogwood's getting ready to bloom, which is a very, very pretty plant. And the garden, I'm getting blossoms on my veggies, which is what I'm looking for. So really, really having a good short spring this year. Looking forward to, I really, truly, truly hope that we get a couple of hints of spring yet. I know it's April, but I don't want to get May weather in April. Really would like it to stay cooler. Not sure that's going to happen. Not at all sure that's going to happen. Can only hope. We are enjoying our bluebirds. The parents are constantly flying in and out of the house because they've got to feed three babies. They are maturing really fast. They went from the ugliest only a mother could love look to now they're starting to feather out a little bit. And mom and dad are exhausted. They are just in and out of the house trying to keep up with keeping them fed. So we get to see them quite a bit. They have been great to watch. And my Martin, I think I'm up to two pair right now. We get an occasional third pair. But when all three pairs are there on the house, it is loud. Man, they have this very unique sound. And it doesn't take many of them to hear it from a very far distance. And I swear they won't be out on the house till we go outside. And when we go to do work outside near their house, they come by and watch. They do supervisory work, I should say. They don't actually do any physical labor, of course, so they must be supervisors, right? They have been doing well, too. They have not started building a nest yet, and that may be a while. They have not started to feather the nest so that they can lay eggs. A little early for them yet. And I know a lot of you with Martin houses have to deal with sparrows and starlings. My Martin house came with what's called a starling resistant entry hole, and it does a pretty good job of keeping the starlings out. Haven't had a problem with them getting into the house. But that hasn't stopped the sparrows. And the only solution I have had is I have to take my house and lower it every other day. I open it up. I check all of the houses. Is everything okay? Are we starting to nest? And then I open the house that the sparrow is building in. And I pull it out, pull all the grass he built. They are super engineers for using the grass, and they work nonstop. And every 2 days, I pull out all of the sparrow nest and throw it away. I was disappointed because I pulled out the sparrow nest one day, and I just threw it along the fence line. And I looked out the window, and the sparrow was like, okay, I'll show you. And they deconstructed the nest that I threw out, took the pieces back up to the Purple Martin house, and started building a new nest with the old material. So they're serious recyclers. I now throw the nest in the trash. And no empathy, no sympathy. That may not seem nice, but they harm the Purple Martins. So I figure if I can wear them out, maybe they will move on. I'm not holding out a lot of hope. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. This is Stephen. What can I help you with, Stephen?
Hey, how you doing? We just bought some property, about eight acres or so, and there's enough room to put a little fruit trees in a corner. And I was thinking about the obvious things, peaches and whatnot for the hill country, but I was just wondering maybe what kind of other fruit trees do people plant in Central Texas that may be a little bit off the beaten path that, you know, that people are planting that would do well in this area?
Okay. I'm not a fan of peaches. That's your choice. I have fought for years and had not gotten success with peaches. A lot of times I've had to fight the birds or the squirrels, so that's part of the problem. There are some grapefruit trees in Texas. Pears do very well here. They're attractive in bloom and they have a great fall color too. So pears is one option. Pomegranates, they can be very attractive leaves, and of course the big red pomegranates make it look like Christmas ornaments. They have a wonderful fall color also. They're very bright yellow. They do well here. Pears, pomegranates, figs are an almost run-on autopilot plant. There are very few pests that bother figs, and they can produce a lot of fruit on a single tree. Your biggest problem with figs, unfortunately, is birds. Sometimes squirrels, but you just got to learn to share with the birds, and that'll work out fine. Those three are really pretty reliable here. There are several apple varieties that will do very well. And some of the apple varieties are in-hand varieties, meaning pick it off the tree and take a bite. You don't have to do anything to it. You just eat it. There are varieties like Granny Smith that are kind of tart, but they'll do well here too.
Is there any particular type of soil you're looking for? Like this area is like not typical. It's closer to the river, so it's kind of the black, you know, earthy soil rather than the sandy red soil, if, you know, that kind of thing. Is there any kind of dirt that's better or worse?
You've got better. If that's what you're talking about, especially if it is near a river, I say that as in over the years, you've gotten silt and stuff like that on the soil. And when I say over the years, I mean literally centuries. You probably have much better soil than anybody with the sandy loam and things like that. And you can do trees there. What can you do for providing water?
Well, we have our own well.
So long as you can get water to the trees, both to get them started and to get them, you know, good fruit on them, that will help a lot. Are you interested in pecans?
Yes, I was definitely going to do pecan trees along the backside, but there's so many varieties, I didn't even know where to begin.
A local nursery can give you a really good explanation as to which pecans do well. There are pecans that'll do just fine without needing a pollinator or a pair of pecans. There are pecans that are really good and they do need pollinators. You'll need to get a certain, you know, two or more of a certain type of pecan. So you really want to go to a local nursery and talk to them about what's the best pecan here? what will do well where you're talking about. And the other thing about pecans is they want a deep soil. And it sounds like you have a deep soil.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. It doesn't hit that typical limestone that you normally have around Kerrville.
That would be to your benefit, and a pecan would do very well here, or multiple pecans. But you got to remember something here, Stephen. If you put these plants in today, you have some miracle where you've got all the fruit trees or nut trees that you want and the capability to plant them correctly today, you're still looking at 5 years before you get a significant, reliable harvest. So
no, that's fine. This is a retirement property, so that'll be fine.
Yeah. Good, because a lot of people think you plant a peach and next year you have peaches. You're really not going to. So if you've got the patience, it sounds like you've got the right spot to grow the plants. By the way, I didn't say this too. There are plums that do well here. And there are plums that don't need a pollinator. And there are plums, more than one variety that will do well here. So you can have pears, peaches, plums, pomegranates, figs. I don't think I'm leaving anything out there, but persimmons, native persimmons and the Japanese persimmons, they will grow here too, and they can produce a really delicious fruit.
Now, well, thank you.
You bet. Your only problem now is deciding what you want to plant.
Good deal. Thank you much.
You bet. Thanks for the call. Yeah, folks. And I didn't mention citrus. That's pretty much a container plant. There are varieties you could put in the ground, but you shouldn't rely on them. He's probably not in an environment where he could do an apricot, but I'm always proven wrong. I get people tell me all the time they got apricots. Good for them. But those are generally the trees that will produce reliable harvests here in Texas. Let's go to the phone. This is Jimbo. Jimbo, what can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you doing today?
Lovely day.
Yes, sir. Hey, just a quick call about the martins on how to get the sparrows away. I had issues at my house. They like to form their nests on my stone. I'm the only house in the neighborhood that doesn't have it. Go to Walmart and get you a bunch of kites that have the hawk design on them and hang them up. I'm the only one. We had pest control do stuff. I've put owls out. I've done everything. But a $3 hawk kite, I've got two of them. I haven't seen a sparrow in 3 years.
Does it scare away martins?
Yeah.
Kind of defeats the purpose of what I was looking for there.
For the martins, I'm sorry. No, not the martins. Just the sparrows, and you mentioned one other bird. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Starling.
They're flying in from Mexico.
Yeah, I'm getting the martins, and I'm happy about that. But it's the
the purple martins. Where you've got the bulb nest, the white ones that you can raise and lower with the crank.
Well, I can raise and lower it, but no, I have the metal houses that are square and kind of look like a house.
Gotcha. I know some people use the, I've got those white bulb looking things. But no, this will not scare off the martins.
Okay.
Just the sparrows and stuff.
That's an easy fix. and I will be trying that one out fairly soon here, as soon as I can go and get one, because I don't have to do anything. It'll work to keep them gone. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, well, and it's it won't go after the martins because they're a little bit larger in size. The spares are about half the size of them.
Got it.
They like the hawks go after them for feeding, like mice and stuff like that, the smaller items.
Well, that'll work for me. I will try to see if I can get that going here and report back on how well it's working.
All right, sir. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks for the call, Jimbo. Folks, we got to take a break here. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It is going to be a pretty decent day weather-wise to be out in the garden. I need to tie up a tree so it's staked properly and isn't going to blow over. I want it to grow straight up and down. Need to do some weed control. Got a couple of flower beds that are getting a little out of hand. Going to need to get some weeds out of them. I'm using up my mulch. I had 3 trees removed years ago, and they ground it and left me a pile of mulch, and I'm finally starting to see the bottom. The stuff I'm digging up and using, man, it is the greatest consistency. It has been breaking down, full of great biology, and it looks good putting it down around my plants. Got another flower bed to do yet, but after that, I've already mulched for the year. So I'm hoping for the best when the summer heat comes. I'm hoping that the mulch really preserve whatever water we can get. Let's go to the phone. This is Patrick. Patrick, what can I help you with?
Sir, I heard you mention earlier about wildflowers, and I've seen those packets that you can buy, and then you just spread them on the ground. Is that all you need to do? Do you need to till them into the ground at all?
No tilling. No, you don't need to till them. If you want to do extra, there are 2 things you can do that'll really help. When you go to spread them on the ground, you want those seeds to actually touch soil. So maybe you rake the ground a little bit first. You don't have to make big trenches or anything. You just want to make sure that seed can touch soil. Number 2,
okay,
if
Jeff,
you happen to be, if you're spreading them on bare ground, walk on them when you're done spreading them out. That helps push them into the dirt and will increase the germination rate of all of the plants.
Well, that just sounds great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Patrick. Yeah, folks, it's not difficult with the wildflower seeds. If you're trying to make a wildflower meadow out of something that was a turf grass, you got an issue here. It will be, by default, more difficult because that seed has to get through the turf. It has to get down to where it can touch the soil. The last thing you want is for a seed to germinate on top of a blade of grass, because it'll never wind up getting water and nutrients and the things it needs. And guess what? Your seed won't come up. So the better you can get the seed to the soil, and it doesn't have to be some super duper hard way to do this, the better the germination rate will be. So take a rake and simply drag the rake across the soil. even if there's weeds and grass and stuff like that, make it so that the seed has a route to get down to the actual soil. And if you're planting seeds on bare ground, you, let's say you dug up, removed all the turf, and you've got a bare patch. Sprinkle those seeds and then walk on them. That will push the seed into the soil just enough to get really good contact. Now, if we were doing, say, Bermuda grass by seed, and you had a flat prepared area, you could get a lawn roller. You wouldn't have to fill it all the way, but you could get a lawn roller that would put some weight on those seeds on the bare ground and help push them into the soil. Make sure they had really good contact. And that will help them germinate. You can do the same with your wildflower seeds, although you probably don't need the lawn roller. But that will help them germinate. Everybody will ask, the next question is, do I water them in? Usually no. And the reason for that is these seeds, especially Texas native wildflowers, are totally prepared for the weather they're going to get. This is where they evolve. This is where they grow. If you water them and you give them enough water to get them started, you have to make sure you get water out there for them until they put roots down. If the seed gets wet and starts germinating and we don't get any more water and you don't water it anymore, it'll wind up drying out and dying. You're so much better to put the seeds out and let nature take control at that point. It's nice if you can time things around rainy weather. That will help them come up faster. But you may not be helping giving them, you know, too much love, too much TLC. You get them wet, you get them starting to grow, and then suddenly we don't get rain or you don't water. You may not have helped. Texas native wildflowers are as tough as it gets. They grow in environments that other plants can't even begin to think of. So keep that in mind. And if you look at many of these wildflower seed packets, they'll probably say, especially ones that are a mix, that of all of the seeds that are in this packet, some of them come up at different times of the year. The idea is that with very little effort, you can have wildflowers blooming 365 days of the year. And that's the advantage of them. They really love Texas. And they can give you an appearance that can be just stunning. Absolutely gorgeous plantings here. And if you haven't noticed, if you've been driving on any of the highways, especially state roads, you notice all those blue bonnets, they're going to be turning into Gallardia, Indian paintbrush, things like that now. But those blue bonnets are there because of ladybird, and we should be grateful for it. Folks, this has been Gardening Naturally, coming up to the top of the hour. I will talk to you all again tomorrow at 8 a.m.